Sunday, January the 10th, I woke quite late after 10 to find snow falling lightly and the world wrapped in white. Perhaps I've just unwound from the long excitement of campaign and election, but sleep is ineffably pleasant. It was Lyndon, not I, who said, "Get up and get dressed quickly and we'll go to church. Where do you want to go, St. Mark's?" So I did, and we made it just in time to arrive with Linda Bird in the snow. Lucy declined politely, said she had already been to Mass. As soon as we got settled in our pew, we looked across the church and I saw Coco MacPherson approaching with two little friends, negroes, about 9 or 10 years old. Coco must be about 6. Lyndon smiled at her, and Coco, who regards Lyndon as her very special personal friend, not without an element of coquetry in it, and she is an adorable little girl, came marching over, bringing her friends, and squeezed in the seat between us. I moved over to make room for them. They were very polite and well-mannered, and left when it came time for the sermon and Sunday school started. A Negro layman read to the congregation from the scriptures. Without much talk about it, I always notice that at Bill Baxter's church, there are a few Negroes in the congregation, one or two in the choir. I saw one assisting as an acolyte the other day. There's quite a coterie of deaf people there. Downstairs, on the way to the coffee room, the walls are covered with thumb-tacked work of artists, members of the congregation. Pen and ink, oil, crayon. They're for sale, and the half the proceeds go to the church. It certainly is an activist church. And at the opposite pole from fashionable, but very interesting. One of the things I'm proudest about in the closed year 1964 is that we went to church nearly every Sunday, I think about 50 out of the 52, and that it was Lyndon's idea, not mine, to send a substantial check to contribute to the work of St. Mark's and of St. Barnabas. We had coffee afterward, and it's possible here to mix and really talk with the congregation without finding yourself in a receiving line, as we do at the Christian church, so much larger. Then out into the snow and back to the White House, we asked Sam Houston to come down and have lunch with us. A rare meal with Linda, Lucy, and Sam Houston all at the table. Even him came up and bounded all over the furniture. And then Lyndon lay down for a long nap, and I think really took one. To keep him company, I tried, but it was impossible after a good 11 hours the night before. Lucy and I had a long, happy talk. She told me that she would go to the church services with us at the inauguration. She also told me that Father Montgomery had made it clear to her that he was not going to baptize her until we gave our consent, and that the best thing we could give her for her birthday present or her graduation present was our free and willing consent, because she wants very much for it to be something that even if we are not wholeheartedly in favor of, even if there is a pang, an ache, a sense of departure, we want for her good and with the feeling that it will make more of a person out of her. I doubt that time will change her. And I fear a bit a sense of estrangement between her and Linda because of Linda's own engagement once to a Catholic boy. I think the church made something of a difference and was in part responsible for their breaking up. We called George Mahons, and they came over and had a quiet dinner with us. George, now number 2 man in the Texas delegation, wears well with the years. He has grown, and I find him very interesting. We called the Ewing Thompsons in El Paso and had a delightful reminiscent chat with them. They promised to be up in April, and that's when I can get all the Texas delegation over. The personal, chummy little upstairs visit we ought to have all together sometime. It's rather interesting to see that we should have arrived at the pinnacle of the presidency and find ourselves with time now and then and the desire to have a quiet evening with just 1 or 2 Texas congressmen, more so than we used to when Lyndon was majority leader. Marianne Means had an interesting piece in the paper drawing a parallel between Andrew Jackson and Lyndon. I had found him quietly reading before his State of the Union message Marcus James' biography of Andrew Jackson, long his hero, and selecting a quote from it to use in the State of the Union. "I intend to ask for nothing that is not clearly right and to submit to nothing that is wrong. Marianne drew a parallel between that and our late relations with the French today. And she ended with a comment on Lyndon, who, like Andrew Jackson, had invited everybody to come to his inauguration. It appears that when the house and grounds got wildly full of invading guests, Andrew himself fled through a back door and sneaked up the street to a little tavern. Lyndon, according to Marianne, ends his story with a rueful laugh. If I knew where that tavern was today, I might have to go there myself. I don't feel like the year can really begin. We can really get down to work till we get through the 3 days of that inauguration. I want to get through it with style and warmth, coming as close to remembering everybody we should as humanly possible. One of the papers showed a delightful picture today of the three Shriver children with their father visiting Lyndon in the White House. As photogenic as all the Kennedy family. We remembered too late the Ray Roberts reception for the three new members of the Texas delegation and phoned them our best wishes